Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled Unplugged, Unleashed, and Out of Control. Tom, Larry Winget is by far one of the most popular presenters. He's already provided 10 different presentations for the series, and this is his 11th. The amazing thing about Larry, though, is that each presentation is always equal to or better than his last. What are your thoughts on this presentation?
Well, Bill, this presentation is actually rather unique. After Larry shot his PBS special entitled Success is Your Own Fault in front of live cameras, he immediately came back out on the stage and treated the crowd to another session that's a bit more, well, in your face as a bonus. Like all of Larry's presentations, he's straightforward, to the point, and will keep you laughing throughout. To be honest, Bill, this presentation is like attending a top comedian's performance in Las Vegas, but leaving with practical knowledge that can be easily applied to life and business.
You are 100% correct, Tom. This is one of those presentations that our audience will be listening to over and over again. If you need a big belly laugh, along with a huge dose of straightforward, common sense, wisdom on life and business, this presentation is going to provide it. Larry needs little introduction. He is known as the pit bull of personal development and is a 6-time New York Times best-selling author. He has spoken to nearly 400 of the Fortune 500 companies and is in the International Speakers Hall of Fame. Larry has been the host of his own show on A&E, done national television commercials, and is a regular on many of the national news programs on the topics of business, parenting, personal finance, and personal development. And now with Unplugged, Unleashed, and Out of Control, here's Larry Winget with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Welcome to Larry Unleashed, Unplugged, and Out of Control. Are you ready? Say you bet.
Yeah.
Because I promise you now, it's about to get ugly. All right, let's get down to some real, real tacky stuff. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. First of all, success is your own fault. Y'all pretty much got that, right?
Yeah.
All right, and I am called, and you got to be prepared for this, I am called the pit bull of personal development. You are aware of that. The reason I'm called the pit bull of personal development, first of all, I used to have pit bulls, and I have an English bulldog now and a French bulldog. Well, this is what I know about bulldogs. Bulldogs grab onto something, and they don't let go. Isn't that right? I grab onto a handful of good ideas, and I'm not letting them go. This is what I believe really works, and the things that I talk about are plain just good old common sense. Somebody wrote the other day, and they wanted to trash one of my books and said, this is plain old common sense. Yes, it is plain old common sense. This is what I've discovered. Common sense, like common courtesy and common knowledge, is anything but common. Isn't that right? And besides that, I think the world is full of way too many poodles of personal development. They're giving out all this crap that has no teeth. They're out to make you feel better about who you are. I don't want you to feel good about who you are. You spend way too much time loving yourself. Really, when I gotta tell you, I've been around lots of folks just exactly like you. You're not that lovable. You need to fix your life. You need to do something about who you are. Isn't that right? Say you bet.
Yeah.
And so today I want to give you some stuff that I really think it takes to be successful. And I will promise you none of it is a secret. I hate for people to talk about the secrets of success. And they're everywhere. I followed a guy the other day. He was out there on stage talking about the secrets of success. He didn't say one thing that was a secret. I heard all that stuff. I've heard it for years. It's not a secret. In fact, I got so fascinated with that whole term, the secrets of success, I went on Amazon. And I started looking up the secrets of success. This is what I found. Interesting little stuff here. The secrets of success. I found 1,800 books that use the words, the secrets of success, in the title. 1,800 books. Folks, in the last 19 years, I've read 4,000 books. I don't know anybody who's read any more books than I have. I read all the time. Books on leadership, sales, customer service, books on how to get rich, books on how to get healthy, books on staying rich, books on staying healthy. books that cover thousands of years of information. And here's what I've discovered after reading 4,000 books, many of which cover thousands of years worth of information. There are only 18 good ideas in the whole world. Seriously, 18 good ideas in the whole world, and we've complicated those. And let me tell you why we've complicated them. It's because we're listening to all those idiots out there who come on stages like this and say, success is hard. Success is not hard. But here's the problem. You want it to be hard. You are clamoring for somebody to tell you success is hard, and here's why. If it's hard, you'll have an excuse for not doing well. And folks, there is no excuse for not doing well. And I'll guarantee you there aren't any secrets out there along those lines. I found 500 books that use the words "the secrets of customer service" in the title. 500 books with the secrets of customer service. How about this? Be nice. Somehow, being nice has become the biggest secret in terms of customer service. Isn't that right? No one's nice anymore. Just be nice. I found 600 books that talk about the secrets of selling. How about this? Ask. Well, Larry, it's got to be tougher than that. Sometimes I ask them and they say no. Ask them again. Well, what if they say no again? Ask them again. After you've asked them 3 or 4 times, go ask somebody else. I mean, this stuff's not that hard, folks. I mean, come on. I found 700 books about the secrets of leadership. 700 books about the secrets of leadership. How about this? Get out in front of people and give them something good to follow. They will follow. The problem is we don't have people stepping out in front and giving people something good to follow. If you do, you will be a good leader. But you've got to get out in front of people. Give them something good to follow. None of this stuff's that hard, and certainly none of it's a secret. In fact, the number one selling book on our planet right now is a book called The Secret. Y'all read that book? Yeah. Biggest load of crap ever put on paper. Yeah. It is. I know that bothers some of you because you love your secret. Here's the problem with The Secret. It's a half-truth at best. Which, in my opinion, if it's a half-truth, makes it a half-lie. Here's the problem with The Secret. The Secret says what you think about and talk about comes about. That's what The Secret says. What you think about and talk about comes about. No. What you think about, talk about, and get off your ass and do something about is what comes about. You got to be willing to work. Isn't that right? The problem is, and I've seen these people who love The Secret, they go on television and they weigh 400 pounds. And they talk about how they're using The Secret to get skinny. You know, and they spend their whole day watching Montel with a 6-pack of Diet Coke in one hand and a box of Little Debbie snack cakes in the other. And they're saying, I think I'm thin, I think I'm thin, I'm thinking. No, you're fat. You are not going to think your way to thin. Put down the food. Walk away. Walk anywhere. And then you got those idiots out there who are saying, just touch yourself in the chest, say, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. Heard those guys? I'm rich, I'm rich. Listen, you can touch yourself till you get happy. You ain't touching yourself till you get rich. You gotta work till you get rich, isn't that right? That's what it comes down to. People aren't willing to work anymore. And suddenly, the biggest secret, I'll give you the secret, here's the real secret, work. That's it. But Larry, my work's not fulfilling. I don't care. You're getting paid, aren't you? That's really why you went to work, wasn't it? But I don't love what I do. And then you got all those idiots out there saying, you got to love what you do every single day. I got to tell you right now, I hate what I do for a living. That surprises you, doesn't it? Now, here's where every single one of you are confused. You think this is what I do for a living. It's not what I do for a living. I do this maybe 100 hours per year. I travel 250 days a year to make this 100 hours happen. I love my 100 hours. I can't stand those 250 days on the road. Here's the key, though. I love my 100 hours enough, I'm willing to do it. I'll put up with it. That's how you have to look at your job. I mean, you're going to love what you do realistically about 10% of the time. The other 90%, you're just going to be putting up with it, hoping that 10% is going to carry you through. Isn't that right? That's what it really comes down to. So all these books out there that are just saying the stupid stuff, come on, people. Get through this stuff. It's got to make sense. You know, when I was going through that list of all the stuff I found on Amazon, this is even more amazing. It doesn't have anything to do with the term secrets. I found 46,000 books that talk about teamwork. I wrote a book. Book's called, it's called Work for a Reason. One of the chapters in this book says, teamwork doesn't work. Now, I know that bothers some of you, because you love your team. We just couldn't get it done without the team. Come on. Let me tell you why teamwork doesn't work. Somebody on the team isn't going to work. Isn't that right? Somebody on the team isn't going to work, which means the team didn't get the work done. You got a handful of superstar employees that did the work, while you got a handful of mediocre employees who are in there hiding amongst them. And yet, when it's time to give the credit, they're the first one to step to the front of the line and say, look what we did. When those superstars are turned around and say, you didn't do a darn thing. Isn't that right? And the bosses and managers and leaders are putting up with it. Here's what every boss, manager, and leader in America ought to do today. They ought to walk into their office and fire 20% of their employees. Because I guarantee you, in every business, every church, every organization, every business in the world, 20% of the people aren't doing a darn thing. They're not doing anything. Let me tell you what they are doing. I'll take that back. Let me tell you what they're doing. They're destroying the credibility of the leadership. Because everybody in that company knows those 20% aren't doing anything. And the leadership has turned their head and they let it go on. Isn't that right? So what they ought to do is be firing the dead weight. Here's my whole philosophy of business, by the way, because I'm primarily a business guy. I believe that business kind of falls down into these categories. It's the 20-60-20. You got 20% of the people that are at the top. They're going to do what they're supposed to do because it's kind of like the story about my dad. They said they would do it. They're going to do it no matter what. If you didn't show up, they would still work just as hard. They're that kind of person. They live a life based in integrity and hard work, and it doesn't matter whether they feel good, whether they're sick, whether they're motivated, whether they find their purpose or their passion, they show up every single day and they give their very best. Why? They said they would. Then, you got the 20% on the bottom. They're not going to do anything no matter what you do. You can stand there every single day and say, you got to work harder. I'm going to fire you. Then they never get fired. But you got 20% of the people aren't doing anything. So here's pretty much what you got as a leader or as a manager. You got 60% in the middle. You got no impact on those people at the bottom. You got no impact on those people at the top. You got to work with those 60% in the middle. And here's what's going to happen. Let's say you all went away and said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to dump those 20% at the bottom. You know what? If you fired them all today, out of that 60% in the middle, you'd have 20% sink right down there. They've just been waiting for an opening. There's a spot I want to sit there. The guy who sits there never works. Now, on the other side, your best 20%, they're going to leave you anyway. No, I promise you they will. The top people always go away. You ought to pat them on the back. Good. Good for you to go. Move on. You want the best for them. Move on. Top 20% always goes away. And here's what's also interesting. It works both ways. You got those people in that 60%? They've just been waiting for an opening. They're ready to step up. Isn't that right? They're looking for an opportunity to be in the top 20%. You just haven't given them that opportunity. You didn't make room for them. So my deal as a leader, as a manager, always be dumping your bottom 20, knowing that there'll be somebody there tomorrow to fill in. But you also need to be moving your top 20 around, making room for those people in the middle to step up. Does that make sense? See, none of this stuff is that hard. Why do we make all this so hard? Again, I'll tell you why we make it so hard. We want an excuse. We want an excuse for not doing well. And I don't think there are any excuses for not doing well. Everybody can do better. Everybody can do better. It's just, are you willing to do it? See, none of this stuff is hard. But see, the other problem is this. We got all these teachers, all these speakers, all these, sorry, preachers, all these guys out there talking. We got the guys writing the books. We got all this stuff saying, let me tell you how to do this. You know, I've always talked, already talked about it. It doesn't matter how you do it. None of that matters. But we're telling people how to be rich when we haven't taught people how to stop being broke. You can't teach people how to be smart until you've taught them how to stop being stupid. You can't teach people to be healthy until you've taught them how to stop being unhealthy. You can't teach people anything good till you've taught them this is bad. Don't do this. You know, it's the old joke. Guy goes to the doctor, says, it hurts when I do this. Doctor says, don't do that. Nobody's out there saying, don't do that. Stop doing that. And that's what we need. I'm working on a new book right now. I've written the three, Shut Up, Stop Whining, Get a Life. It's called Work for a Reason. You're broke because you want to be. Good titles, by the way. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
I love my titles. You're going to like, oh, thank you so much. This is the title of the new book. I just finished it. It'll be out soon. The title is People Are Idiots and I Can Prove It. You like that title? People are idiots and I can prove it. Let me prove it to you right now. It won't take long. By the way, I wouldn't have to say a thing. Also, always, about half the crowd goes, I can help you write that. And then there's about half the crowd going, how dare he? Listen, go. When you're driving home today, when you leave here and you drive down the street, you won't get four blocks before you'll run into an idiot. Isn't that right? Exactly. I mean, idiots are everywhere. Let me prove to you people are idiots. It won't take long. Every cigarette you smoke ends your life 13 minutes earlier. Every cigarette ends your life 13 minutes. Do people still smoke? Why? Well, they're idiots. I mean, isn't that right? You got another excuse? No, they're idiots. They're willing to die. You know what I can get done in 13 minutes? I have an amazing time in 13 minutes. Several times. You think I'm giving my 13 minutes up? No way. Really? People are idiots. You want better kids? Do you? Right now, everybody, do you want to have better children?
Yes.
Do you want to raise a society of better children? Do you really? Do you really? Bull. I never met anybody, though, that doesn't say, oh, you bet we want better kids. Latest study I read said this. The average parent in America today spends 3.5 minutes per week in meaningful conversation with their children. 3.5 minutes per week. Oh, yeah, we want good kids. Not enough to talk to them, but we want good kids. You want better government? Oh, do you really? No, you don't. I'm sorry, you don't. That's one of those times, again, we talk a better game than we deliver. We want better government. Only 60% of the people who are eligible to vote are registered to vote. Only half of them are going to vote. That's the way it works. Historically, that's the way it works in elections. 60% of the eligible people are registered to vote. Only half of those people vote. We all talk about how we want to have better government, and I don't care who you're for in any election, anytime, anywhere. You ought to vote. Isn't that right?
Yes.
People don't. See, people aren't willing to do what it takes to stop being an idiot. 30% of our children, 6 to 19, are obese. 30%. Is that the kids' fault? Nope. It's because instead of a pacifier, we're sticking a French fry in their mouth. Isn't that right? That's the truth, folks. We've created a society of fat kids. In fact, the next book, I just did a several book deal. The next book, I just finished this one. The next one I'm already working on. It's called Stop Raising Stupid Kids. And I'm sorry, but we're raising stupid kids. And you know why we have stupid kids? And I say they're stupid kids because we're graduating kids from high school who can't read their own diploma. That's stupid. We have people who are teachers who have no right to be teachers, yet they're tenured, and we can't fire them. They're not doing their jobs. We're turning out dumb children out of our schools. Isn't that right? It's absolutely true. We fall below almost 25 countries in every single area. Math, history, you pick an area of education, we are not at the top of the list, folks. We don't even hit top 25 in most areas. We ought to be ashamed. We got kids who are fat because we're fat parents, and we're not teaching them how to eat right. And we indulge them because we forgot how to say no to them. And we're turning out stupid kids because we are stupid parents doing a lousy job. Well, I don't think that's fair, Larry. Who promised you fair? In life, whoever promised you fair? Nobody ever promised you fair. Besides, you created the life you're living, but also, you've created the life your kids are living. You are responsible. And you know, today we talk about there's a customer service problem in America. And we would all agree. Customer service sucks. It's horrible. It's terrible. How could it possibly get any worse? Do we really have a customer service problem? Here's what I believe. When I go to the coffee store and I order a cup of coffee and that kid doesn't know how to look up, count change, greet me, say goodbye, say thank you, even notice that I'm there, that's not a customer service problem. That's a parenting problem. You know, folks, I grew up in Oklahoma, and what they used to say there, his mama didn't raise him right. Isn't that right? That's what it comes down to. We're not raising our kids right. And then here's what happens. We just kind of let them muddle through on their own. And then they get out of high school, and we dump them on some employer, and we say, you fix them. And it's too late. It's too late. We should have been fixing them ourselves, shouldn't we? So my whole approach is we don't have customer service problems, we don't have sales problems, we don't have leadership problems, we don't have employee problems, we don't have financial problems, we have the problems that we create as parents. We're the ones who turn those kids loose with very little education or training. We don't teach our kids how to spend money. And by the way, we say, well, we're teaching them how to earn money. That's easy. Earning money's easy. I mean, really, if you can't find a job, earn a job, get a paycheck, come on. Easiest country in the world to go to work. I know, and they say, but Larry, we got people standing on quarters. We'll work for food with signs. Will they work for a job? No, they're willing to work for food. And you know, most people I see standing on corners don't look to me like they need a lot more food. Really. They need a job. You can earn a living. So we're teaching kids, okay, how to earn a living, not as good a living as they could learn. We're not teaching them how to spend their money. Teach them how to make money, not teach them how to spend their money. Best thing you can do for your kids is teach them how to spend their money. Really, as I look back, and one of the things I'm doing for this book is I'm asking people, what's the one lesson you're glad your parents taught you? You got one? Could you crystallize it? What's your one thing that you wish your parents had taught you? Now that you're an adult, you go, man, I wish I'd known that. You know what mine was? The importance of three numbers. What are those three numbers? Your credit score. I never learned. That makes a big difference. I mean, that determines how good a job, I mean, how good a rate you're going to get on your house, isn't that right? Yeah. Whether you're going to get a house or not, how much you're going to pay for that house, how much interest you're going to pay on anything you ever buy for the rest of your life is determined by those three little numbers, your credit score. Average kid today doesn't even know what a credit score is. And yet, in high school, we're letting them get charge cards, credit cards. High school. Come on. We are where we are in our society because that's what we allowed it to become. Your life is the very same way. Your kids are the very same way. Your money is the very same way. Every single area of your life is the way it is because that's what you allowed to have happen. That's what I said earlier. Were you not paying attention? I mean, really, do you just suddenly wake up and say, I'm just surrounded by stupid? No, it's been there all along. You weren't aware. You weren't tuned in. You said, well, and this is what happens. And it happens on all areas. First, let me give you a little aside here. Did you ever go to a restaurant? It's pretty good. You go, in fact, this is real good. I'm going to come back next week. Next week when you come back, wasn't quite as good. It's all right. Wasn't quite as good. Wait a few weeks. You give it one more try. Service really was pretty bad. You know, you had crud on your fork. You had to ask for another one. Come back a month later, they're out of business. Now, did they just suddenly go bad? Nope. It's because they got a manager who wasn't paying attention one day. One day. He's got an employee, came in a little late, didn't take quite good as good a care of the customer as we got. He saw it. He goes, ah, it'd be easier to let it slide. Didn't want to fix it. And because he let it slide that one day, another employee saw this one giving bad service or coming in late, and they said, oh, that's okay. That's acceptable. I can do that. And so they started doing the very same thing. And so then the manager might have said something. He goes, hey, he got by with it. And he goes, oh, you're right, he did. All right. And so then another one does it, and another one does it, and another one does it. And pretty soon they all go out of business. Now, why is that? Lack of awareness, lack of willingness to step in and do the ugly thing, the uncomfortable thing, and turn it around and correct it. We do the very same things when we look in the mirror. We go, ah, it's just one day. Is it that big a deal? You know what? Everything's a big deal. It's all a big deal. But we have tried to, in our lives right now, justify gray areas. You see, I wrote a little book. It's the last little self-published book I wrote. It's called Black and White. I believe life's black and white. I really do. I think it's right or it's wrong, it's good, it's bad, it's hello or goodbye. That's how life really is. There is no gray area. We try to justify the gray area. There is no gray area. Well, how do I know, Larry, if it's right or if it's wrong? You had to ask. You had to ask. I have never had to stop and ask myself whether something was right. I knew it was right. Really, I knew it was right. I didn't even have to think about it. I acted from instinct. Our instinct is right. If you have to stop and think about it and say, is this right or if it's wrong? Trust me, folks, it's wrong. It's wrong. You shouldn't do it. That's the test I use. If I had to think about it, it was the wrong thing to do. Here's my other test in life. Whether something's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. What I want my mama to see me doing it. I'll disrespect myself. And have many times. I won't disrespect my mama. I just won't do it. My mama earned that respect from me. She earned it. How did she earn it? I've thought about it. How did she earn it? She loved me more than anybody else on the planet. That was never a question. And she kicked my butt harder than anybody else on the planet. She would never let me buy with anything. She was that person that I've talked about. Right there saying, Larry, you can do better than that. You can do better. I expect more from you than that. When I was writing my last book, I was in trouble, folks. I got a short deadline. Short deadline. Too many pages and not enough days. And I was sweating it hard. Called my mama. She said, Larry, you sound down. You really do. You don't sound so good. I said, Mama, I'm in trouble on this one. I mean, I got a short deadline. A publisher needs this book. I don't have enough days. I don't think I can get it done. She said, you shut up talking like that right now. You can get it done. You always get it done. You're my son. You'll get it done. You know what? I got it done. We don't have parents today that earn that kind of respect. We say we want our kids to respect us. We're not respectable. Really. We have kids who are full of disrespect. And you know what? As I look at their parents, I don't blame them. Really, I don't. I get it. I wouldn't respect them either. Isn't that right? You got to be a respectable human being. We've got bosses, and I work with all these companies, and they say, my employees don't respect me. You're not a respectable manager. That's true. You think you're going to get respect just because you're the boss? No. What made you special? Nothing. You earn respect. Isn't that right? By the way, this just kind of popped in my head. We talk about that special. One of the things I'm writing that I just wrote for the new book on stupid kids, I said, stop telling your kids they're special. Really. They're special to you because they're yours. I mean, all they had to do was be born to be special to you. Really, they didn't earn that at all. But the minute they step out your door, they're going to find out real quickly there's nothing special about them. You better teach them how to be good, how to be people of honesty and integrity, how to work hard. But Daddy, no, shut up. You took the job. You agreed to do the work. Do the work. Isn't that right? You're not special. You're special to me, honey. I love you. I'm your daddy. You're my little princess. But out there, you're just another employee making minimum wage. Fill the coffee cup and say, do you want fries with that? Isn't that right? Come on, folks. None of this stuff is all that hard. So, that's sort of my philosophy of success in several different areas. I'm going to be willing right now to take some questions. I'm sure when you ask me a question, I'll get off on a rant. Anybody got a question in their mind they'd like to ask? Step right over there to that microphone, ask that question, and be prepared for whatever I might say.
First, I would like to thank you for your refreshness.
Okay.
A why is very important.
Yep.
As you go in the morning. Thank you. What do you do, physically, mentally, whatever, when that why is still not, for that particular day, it's not good enough to get you going, get you motivated, get you strength, get you whatever. Is there something that you do?
For all of those who didn't hear that, he said, what do you do when you wake up in the morning and that why is just not strong enough to get you motivated and keep you going throughout the day? I recently got a rep, and you can sit back down and I'll answer your question. Thank you. Everybody give him a little round of applause for asking the question. Takes a lot of guts to step up and be first. I appreciate it. I got a letter the other day from a guy who said, I've lost my motivation, Larry. I have. I've got a house and I got two kids and a wife and I got a dog and somehow I've just lost my motivation. I get up in the morning and I go, I don't know what to do. And I go, what an idiot you are. First of all, you got a house. A lot of people don't have houses and they're losing their houses. That alone ought to be motivation. You got a wife. You got a wife. You got two kids. I call that motivation. You got a dog. Do it for the dog. How can you write me of all people? Larry, you wrote me and say you don't have any motivation? Come on. So, very nicely, let me say, I don't care whether you're motivated. Really, you're going to have days you don't feel like doing anything. You don't. You go, I'm not motivated today. I'm not pumped up. I'm not fired up. I just can't get it going. I don't care. Stop thinking about how motivated you are and stop thinking about you have obligations. I work because I said I would do it. I have one overriding rule for life and business. This is my one, and you want to write this down? You can write this down. I notice a lot of you taking notes. This is it. It's Larry's number one rule for life and business. Do what you said you would do, when you said you would do it, the way you said you would do it, period. Do what you said you would do, when you said you would do it, the way you said you would do it. It stops right there. That's what you've got. That's called your word. It's called living with integrity. It's called taking responsibility for your actions. Why do I do it? I said I would do it. When do I do it? When I said I would do it. How do I do it? Exactly the way I said I would do it. That's what your employee wants from you. That's what your employers want from you. That's all any customer ever wants from anybody. That's all your husband wants, your spouse wants, your significant other wants. That's all your kids want from you as a parent, and that's all you want from your kids. You want them to do what they said they would do, when they said they would do it, the way they said they would do it. Period. Stop right there. Life's over. Game over. You'll have a wonderful life, I promise. Isn't that it? So I never worried about whether I'm motivated or not. I don't care. I said I would do it. And I never offer myself an excuse. I don't care whether I feel good that day or not. I said I'd do it. I'll do it. Sometimes it costs me money to do it. Sometimes I have to be embarrassed and humiliated and eat some words. Sometimes I got to do work harder. I'm not in the mood to do it at all. I still got to do it. I said I would. Next question. Anybody? Step right up there and ask it.
Okay, Larry, I've listened to everything you've said.
Good.
I'm a grandmother and I have a child.
Yep.
Not a child, he's 30 years old. When and how do I say to him, no?
Okay.
I think that if
just
I learn
just open your
how...
mouth and say, no.
I think that if I said no, I'd have more money to invest to get to where I'm going. So at what point do you say no and mean no? And
you said he was 30 years old?
No.
You said he was 30 years old?
Yes.
You're 12 years too late. Listen, I appreciate the position you're in. I really do. And I get a lot of letters like that from people saying, how do I tell my kids no? You just say it. No, I'm cutting you off. You're a grown man. A grown man. I don't care what problems you got. You know, let me show you real problems. Get in the car with me. Let's take a drive. I'll show you people with real problems. Let's go to the hospital. Let me walk you through a ward of people with real problems. You know, I don't care what you're going through. Really, I don't care. There's always somebody worse. And people, you know why people do what they do in life? You know, I said a while ago, you change because you can. People get by with what they get by with in life because they can. And the reason they can is we let them. We foster mediocrity in people. Because we're willing to accept lousy behavior. And the people we're most willing to accept lousy behavior from is our kids. And we do it in the name of love. And I call it child abuse. I shot a television show with a lady who said, well, let me tell you what I believe, Larry. And this is what my daddy taught me. As long as I'm wearing a Rolex, driving a Mercedes, and wearing the best clothes in town, it doesn't matter how much money I've got or who I've stepped on the bills or any of the things that goes on at home, I look good. What do you have to say to that? And I said, your daddy abused you as a child. He taught you stupid stuff. That's wrong information, and he ought to be ashamed, and he ought to be held accountable. However, you're a grown person. You should have figured this stuff out along the way. But my daddy loved me. I guess we got to see if that's really true or not. Because she was facing bankruptcy. She was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And she thought that was important. That stuff's not important. Come on. We do what we do out of love for our kids, and we're not loving our kids when we let them get by with that stuff. You love your kids when you teach them right. You teach them they can earn their own way. My kids are here with me today. I got a son, 25 years old. He's a fashion designer in Los Angeles, doing real well. I'm really proud of him. My other son was in Iraq. He was in the Army for 8 years. He was a sniper and all that. Now he's a cop in the Phoenix Police Department. I got one son who's a fashion designer and the other who's a trained killer. Pretty much the purest aspects of my personality, though, I got to tell you. So. But I tell you what, I'm real proud of what they become. And I got to say I'm proud of myself. They watched me when I didn't have anything. And they watched me fight back and fight hard. They were there when my wife and I circled the wagons. And if you haven't gotten to that place in your life where you circle the wagon and say, I don't care about the rest of the world, we are a united front against whatever comes our way. Amen. And we will do this. and it won't be easy. We're going to suck it up and make it happen. And they were there and they watched that, and they watched what I had to go through. And I set high expectations. See, people live up to or they live down to the expectations you set for them, and they will go just as far as they possibly can until you stop and say, no, that's the limit. You've got to impose those limits. You impose them on yourself, your kids, your employees. You always have to impose limits. We live in a no-limit society. That's stupid and it's wrong, and we're ruining ourselves because of it. We have to impose limits. And my kids always knew that I set high expectations for myself, and I said, I will achieve this, and then I went about achieving it with no excuses. You know, I did the same for my kids. I said, set those kind of expectations for yourself. I never expected my kids to be the best. I expected them to give their best. And sometimes when they gave their best, you know, their best wasn't good enough. Everybody says, well, your best is good enough. No, sometimes it isn't. Some of you say, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to be a soccer player, Dad. I'm going to give my best. Sorry, son, you suck. Really, you're no good at this. This can't be fun to be this bad every single week. I'm miserable watching you. Stop doing this. Let's find something you are good at. So we kept trying, and with one, it took a little while. But then he discovered it. And he said, you know, when your kid, your son, comes to you and says, what do you want for Christmas? He said, a sewing machine. I go, I gave him a sewing machine. He's doing real good. He found what he loves. He found what he's good at. He works hard. The other son, my other son was a mess. I mean, really, he was a mess. He's probably sitting back there in the back somewhere. I mean, really, when he was 18 years old, he came in and he said, Dad, I am messing up. I go, yes, you are. Only he didn't use the word messing up. He was a little more explicit than I was too. I said, you are messing up, son. He said, Dad, I'm messing up every area in my life. I'm in trouble. I go, yes, you are. And he goes, this is what I need to do, Dad. I need to join the Army. I need to fix myself. I said, let's go. Now, we weren't in a war at the time, or I might have felt different. But he walked in, and they started talking to him about all the things he could be in the Army. He said, shoot, if I'm going to join the Army, I want to shoot guns, blow stuff up. Tim, that's what the Army, man. I want to blow stuff up. You know what? He's really good at it. I mean, no, he's really good. Expert marksman. I mean, he's amazing. Handgun specialist. He's amazing. He found his thing. Took him a while to find it. Sometimes it takes us a while. But you know what? That's what people are telling me all the time. They're grown men and women saying, I'm still looking to find my thing. Well, you know why you're looking to find your thing? Keep your job and go to work. You got commitments. You got bills to pay. Isn't that right? I got time for one more question. Anybody?
Hi, Larry. I'm happy to be here, and I thank God for this opportunity.
Thank you.
I am listening to you say, work hard, work hard. Right now, I'm in debt. I'm not going to tell you how I got there. It was situations
that
happened to me.
I know how you got there.
My question is, I am working hard for jobs. I have worked. I'm making minimal money. It's so menial, I don't even want to go to these jobs that I work. I walk in, I get a job. I started working for a company. I bought the company. It's a gas additive business. I took off yesterday. I decided to do it full time yesterday. I got so many calls, so many emails to send. Do I go back to this menial job where I'm barely making my bills, not even touching the surface, or do I focus on this business that I purchased and go from there?
All right. Thank you so much for your question. Give her a quick round of applause. I love the question. I can't answer it. You have to answer that for yourself. Here's what I believe, and this is one of the problems I think we have right now in America in terms of money and credit and the people who have given us money. What it comes down to is this. We entered into an agreement. We made a commitment with the people. When they issued a credit card, it was very clear. We said we would make this payment to you, and we would make it on this date, and that's our deal, and it's a contract, and we gave our word, and we ought to do it no matter what. I don't care whether you have to work menial jobs to do it or whether you have to work five jobs to do it. The point is, if you can keep working those jobs and make your payments, good for you. You're doing what it takes no matter what, whether you're happy, whether you feel good about it or not. However, if you can do something that is much better and leads you to other places, then you do that. But my bottom line is this. Can I make my payments and pay my bills? Because your number one obligation is to the money you've already spent. Not how much money you're going to make in the future. You took on that debt willingly, unwillingly. I don't know what the circumstances is, and again, I don't care. The fact is, you said you would do it, you'd make your payments, you do what it takes no matter what to make your payments. That, so you have to answer the question for yourself. You say, can I make enough money over here to make the payments and still stay current on my bills and be able to pay and save and invest and do all those kind of things? Or do I need to go back to the other jobs? And by the way, I appreciate the fact that you said you've had several jobs and have several jobs. I appreciate that. I got people who come to me all the time and say, well, Larry, you want me to get a second job? I want you to get five jobs. Is that what it takes to pay your bills? I don't care how hard you got to work. Really, the deal you made with your creditors, why do we, that's a contract. You gave your word. I attacked a person one time and I said, you have no integrity. And they said, what do you mean I have no integrity? I'm just behind on my bills. I'm telling you folks, that's where people's minds are right now. We've let people get to that extreme that they can't make the tie with not making your payments and not paying your bills. They don't even see that it ties in over here to a lack of integrity. You said you would do it. So it's inconvenient. I don't care. You said you would do it. Period. I want to wind it up with this. And I appreciate all the questions, and I really do appreciate y'all hanging in here with me. I think in life, we ought to remember, no matter how hard it is to work and all that sort of stuff, I think we ought to remember how much fun it ought to be, too. Y'all agree with that?
Yes.
I do. I think we ought to have as much fun as we can every single day. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And I'm not talking about being silly and stupid. That's just ignorant, and sometimes it can get you hurt. I'm just saying enjoy your life as best you possibly can. I think it ought to be a good time. Don't you agree? Say you bet.
Yes.
And you know what? It's not that hard to have a good time. And it's, for some people it is. I mean, I know it is for some people. Some people have a really hard time having fun. Y'all know people like that? People with no sense of humor at all. I run into people with no sense of humor. I was doing a speech in Cancun. My wife was with me. We're walking through one of the little malls. And it happened to be the little mall where all the designer stores were. So there was a Gucci store and a Fendi store, Ralph Lauren store, Tommy Hilfiger store, Guess store. Just one little store right after the other. And as we're walking past all these stores, out in front of the Guess store is what we would call, now folks, I'm from Oklahoma. So this is what we call this kind of person in Oklahoma. I don't know what they call this kind of person where you are from, but in Oklahoma, we would call this a big old boy. Y'all know what a big old boy looks like?
Yeah.
Folks, this was a big old boy. He'd just been in the Guess store, bought himself a brand new Guess shirt, had the word Guess written across the front, letters about that big. He's already put his shirt on. He's standing out there in front of the store kind of like this. My wife and I walk out. I see him standing there. I look him up and down, stop in front of him and go, oh, about 375. This fella had no sense of humor. My wife said, I cannot believe you just said that to that man. I said, it said Guess right there. My wife's actually a little amazed at what I do for a living. She remembers when I had a real job. And I said to her the other day, I said, honey, in your wildest dreams, you ever believe I'd be doing this? She said, Larry, in my wildest dreams, you don't even show up. So, folks, let me tell you. If you want to have more fun in life, it's not that hard. This is all you got to do to have more fun in life. And I think this is an important principle of life, too. Trying to figure out how to have more fun. Don't you agree? This is all you got to do. You got to pay attention. There's more funny stuff out there if you will just pay attention. I mean, it's everywhere. I'm doing a speech in Las Vegas, walking down the hall on the way to the meeting room. As I walked down the hall, I saw a sign on one of the doors there in the hall. Now, I was very fortunate. The sign was brand new. It came right off. The sign said, no exit, this is not an entrance. What do you call a door you can't go in or out? A wall, I guess. I was doing a couple of speeches in Canada. I had a dead day in between the speeches, so I was just killing some time. So I took a tour of one of the local wineries. As I toured the winery, I found this little sign. It used to hang in the bathroom of the winery. It said, if this bathroom needs attention, please inform the tasting room staff. I visited a friend of mine in the hospital. I'm on the way to his room, walking in the hallway of the hospital, and I see this little temporary sign taped to the wall of the hospital. The sign said, the obesity support group meeting has been moved to the cafeteria. I got my number one favorite sign. I was doing a speech in Tennessee. Now, I like speeches that are kind of easy to get to because really I'm on the road almost every single day in a different city. This was not an easy one. I had to fly to Nashville, get in a rental car, drive across the state of Tennessee. Tennessee, long state. And stayed all night, got up the next morning, gave the speech, driving the rental car back across the state, and I had to stop and put gas in this car. So I pulled into this little gas station in nowhere, Tennessee. And I get out and I get ready to put gas in the car, and I see that the pump's out of order. Now, it has a sign on it. But the sign doesn't say out of order. The sign doesn't say out of service. The sign doesn't say broken. The sign doesn't say not working. The sign doesn't say any of the things that you would normally associate with something being broken or not working. Instead, this sign, which I have, was taped up there with duct tape. It was written on the back of a 12-pack of Coors Light long necks. And the sign said, "Tored up." T-O-R-D up. I like it simple. That's about as simple as you can get right there. Actually, I was a little surprised that it was tore up. Because again, I'm from Oklahoma, and in Oklahoma, you got a roll of duct tape and a 12-pack of beer, you can fix anything. I'm standing in my back door one day, getting ready to leave town on a series of speeches. My son, who was 19 at the time, turns to me and says, "Dad, I have yet to figure out why anybody would pay you to come talk to him." I said, "What a sweet thing for you to say, son." He said, "I mean it, Dad. I've heard your 18 good ideas, so I'm sick of them. I've heard you tell people life is simple and business is simple. And Dad, with you, life is just always so simple. Dad, I live with you. It's not how you live your life. You've complicated life like everyone else. In fact, at this point, I don't think you've got a clue. I'm the one who's got life figured out, not you." I said, "Well, son, obviously you've got life figured out. You're 19 years old. You just flunked out of your first semester at college. You just totaled your car and you just got fired. You're doing good." He said, "I still know exactly what it takes to be successful." I said, "All right, you're so smart, give it to me." He said, "All right, Dad, here it is." He said, "Dad, when you mess up, big deal. Just admit it, fix it, and move on. And other than that, life's a party." And you know what, folks? He's right. Not me, him. How many of y'all ever messed up before? Big deal. How many of y'all plan on messing up again? Now, somebody always says, "I don't plan on it." Listen, if you don't plan on messing up, you don't ever plan on doing anything. Because if you're ever going to do anything, you're going to mess up. Isn't that right? Big deal. What he said is critical. Admit it. Now, let me see. That's called taking responsibility. Most people in this whole world never get that one simple idea. If that's all I've taught my kids, I've been a pretty good daddy. Admit it, fix it, and move on. And other than that, life really is a party. It's about that long too, isn't it? And we ought to have as much fun as we can every single day. Knowing that the more fun we have at who we are and what we do, the better we will be at what we do. And the better we are at what we do, the more success we will experience, the happier we will be, and certainly the more prosperous we will become.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.